SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in. Game Time Decisions with you here on a Tuesday on Sports Grid. Plenty to get to. NBA playoffs. We have NHL playoffs, full baseball board, and some WNBA. I really want to dive into the Eastern Conference Finals, which came to a conclusion last night as the Celtics sweep the Indiana Pacers. But before we do that, a quick pick for the people. I'm going to go with the LA Sparks team total. Over 79.5 on the road against the Indiana Fever. I think this is a nice little buy low spot. You think about what this team total was when the Sparks were at home against the Indiana Fever, as that was at a 165. And we have a same 165, but a 1.5-point spread is now 5.5. And I think this Sparks offense is in for a bounce-back spot specifically against this opponent, having shot 5 of 24 from 3 in that game, including the starting backcourt for the Sparks going a combined 0 for 12 from deep. So I trust this LA offense. I don't know how much I trust them on the 5.5. I do think they could stay inside that number here against the Fever, whose offense is still a little more up and down right now. But I'm on the LA Sparks team total to start things off here, WNBA style. I am also, by the way, on Shohei Ohtani for Dinger Tuesday. But it was a part of a plan that may be burned. A doubleheader today between the Mets and the Dodgers in Queens, wind blowing out, expected for both games. So I played Ohtani at +310 game one, +340 game number two. Ohtani is supposed to be benched in game two. Maybe he pinch hits, which would be a bit of a disaster. I wouldn't have been as interested in playing Ohtani for this first game. My thought was, give me 8 to 10 at-bats for Shohei with good hitting conditions, and he can put one out here in New York. Now that's completely trimmed down. His fourth at-bat of the game is coming up right now with two on. Hopefully he puts one out here and makes it worth it, because this game is also not delivered any runs. A Lindor two-run shot, the only runs we've seen so far in Mets, Dodgers. Again, hopefully Ohtani can put one out right now. Pitching change going on in that game. As I said, NBA playoffs tonight, certainly taking center stage, Minnesota and Dallas. A best bet in that game that I'm really excited about. The head-to-head markets as a whole are something we'll dive into, but the winner tonight, if it is the Dallas Mavericks, would lock in the NBA Finals, as Boston secured their spot up against the Indiana Pacers last night with another win. And I think it is fair to start by giving Boston their credit. So many Celtics fans frustrated that that's not what they're being given throughout this run. 105-102, your final score. Jason Tatum with 26, 13, and 8. Jaylen Brown with 29 and 6. And Jaylen Brown wins Eastern Conference Finals MVP, something that's very important we'll expand on in just a moment. But as I said, give Boston their credit, because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown right now, I think it would be fair to label this two as the most reliable duo in the sport. It doesn't mean they're the best. It does not mean they are the most successful. But as far as being able to count on these guys to get you to a level, who else would you turn to? Giannis and Dame? Certainly not. That's only a one-year run that was eliminated in round one. You want to use Chris Middleton? You can. A lot of injuries for those two. Jokic and Murray, more successful. Didn't make it out of round two this year. Less conference finals appearances, less NBA finals appearances. Same story with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. A better 1-2, but not a more reliable 1-2. And you could chalk that up to the Eastern Conference if you'd like, but Boston's been doing this throughout. And while this year's run for Boston, which we're going to talk about, has been littered with light competition through injury, let's not pretend this team has not had impressive wins during this run. 5 out of the 7 years since they've drafted Jason Tatum, pairing him with Jaylen Brown, they've been in the conference finals. a Game 7 win in Miami that clinched their ticket to the finals when they played the Warriors. Game 6 in Milwaukee. Game 6 in Philadelphia. This is a team that, again, has plenty of important pieces on the resume. And a sweep in the conference finals is still a sweep in the conference finals, and that's what we just saw for the Celtics against the Indiana Pacers. Year in, year out, you can bank on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown getting to kind of the bare minimum of the expectations. And it says a lot that this year's bare minimum was making the finals, but here we are in the NBA Finals with the Boston Celtics. Now, as far as the added context of it all, Boston fans who say you play who is in front of you, you are correct. There's nothing the Celtics can do about the fact that Embiid couldn't get out of round one, Giannis didn't play in round one, the Knicks didn't beat the Pacers, Donovan Mitchell didn't stay healthy. There's nothing they can do about that. There isn't. But we can also only judge the Celtics off of who is in front of them. And forget about the fact that it was a sixth seed that they played in the conference finals. It has nothing to do with what you believe of the Indiana Pacers or the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Miami Heat. It has to do with the fact that in all three series, the opponent lost their best player for multiple games. The Celtics have played 14 playoff games so far. In 9 of the 14 games, the other team didn't have their best player. That is a fact. Jimmy missed the whole series, Donovan missed 2 full games, and Tyrese Haliburton missed 2 full games, plus a lot of game number 2. So it becomes very difficult then to give Boston a world of credit. Because, and yes, it's fair to say, if Boston smashed all of these teams, that it would have been met with, they're playing terrible basketball teams. Which is maybe a little unfair. But it would have been better probably than what Boston did deliver. Some Celtic faithful, backers, fans, supporters saying, hey, they proved they could win in the clutch. I am not overly excited about being in clutch games because Andrew Nembhard is continuously getting loose against your backcourt that boasts not one but 2 guys that made all NBA defense. I'm not overly excited about that fact. Because the Celtics, and we talk about expectations, and yes, they made the finals, but let's talk about game-to-game expectations. 14 games, 7-7 against the spread. 3-6 since they got past Miami, 1-6 against the number in their last 7 games. There's your story. And again, I know there are probably now just the fans say, God, it's not about the betting. But it gives us an indicator. Is Boston meeting expectations? Are they getting past expectations? No. Not with what's on the court against them. They're playing a shorthanded Pacers team, laying 7 nightly, and they can't extend. It is a series that we left saying, not, wow, the Pacers were completely mismatched. It was, wow, this series could be 3-1 Indy going back to Boston. So you end up in a situation where now not only is it becoming difficult to give Boston credit, but it looks like there are causes for concern. However, if Boston is a product of their environment and playing down to competition, then the finals should bring the best out of this team. And they will be returning Kristaps Porzingis, which is incredibly beneficial for Boston. But if this team is going to get the job done, they are going to need their best player to be their best player. As Jason Tatum was upset last night by Jaylen Brown. And good for JB. But if Jason Tatum is not holding the Finals MVP trophy at the end of that series, it means Boston lost the series. We'll be right back talking Minnesota and Dallas next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
back to right here on Game Time Decisions. It is a Tuesday night. I'm Kevin Walsh. And we will expand on Boston as the build-up to the finals continues to get closer. And the Indiana Pacers are something that we can perhaps mix in throughout the night, but I think it is important we now get to the Western Conference Finals game in Dallas. By the way, for anybody out there who got involved in the over 33.5 road wins bet, we have been given four so far. A win tonight for the Dallas Mavericks would need three in the NBA Finals, which I think is doable. A win for Minnesota is the dream, because I think Dallas, who's not lost back-to-back games, could close things out very much so in Minnesota. That would put us at four for this series, and we would only need one road win, which would be stunning if we didn't see it, but we would only need one road win in the NBA Finals. So a huge game tonight for anybody who is betting on that market. For the actual game and who's actually going to win, I find myself pulling back and forth, but leaning towards Minnesota. It feels a little bit like a blowout to me tonight, either direction. Either Minnesota folds, or Dallas has an off night, no Derek Lively, Luka maybe his first bad game of the year against this Timberwolves defense, and Minnesota can grab one. I'm tempted by some alt spreads, maybe -8.5. Either direction, play them both, see if it looks worth my while here. I do wonder, as Minnesota is getting set to go out there tonight, if there are any adjustments they believe can start to turn the tide for them. Is there anything that they can do against this Dallas offense to slow them down? Because while the offensive woes have been discussed plenty for Minnesota, Cat has been atrocious. Anthony Edwards has not been good enough, neither has Rudy Gobert. It is the defense that is killing Minnesota, because it is the defense that which Minnesota is built on. The league's best defense, undoubtedly, and we saw it at work in the series against the Nuggets. And they've had just nothing for Luka specifically, but it feels like Dallas as a whole. I've wondered if they would throw Jaden McDaniels on Kyrie. He can't guard Luka. I don't know how much more evidence Minnesota needs. Sometimes, despite being a great defensive player, you end up in a bad matchup. Or against a guy who there's nothing you can do with. Minnesota should know this well from literally the last series they just played, in which Rudy Gobert was put in a torture rack consistently by Jokic. If McDaniels, though, would be more effective on Kyrie, you could perhaps prevent him from outplaying Anthony Edwards on a nightly basis. Because that's what's happening. Kyrie is outplaying it in this series, undoubtedly. Heading in, people wondered how the Kyrie versus Karl Anthony Towns matchup would go, and Karl Anthony Towns is being outplayed probably by PJ Washington, maybe even Derek Jones Jr. So if you throw McDaniels on Kyrie, it could be a pivot. I mentioned some of these head-to-head markets, and I'm wanting to fade Kyrie tonight a bit. His points prop is 23.5. There, in the head-to-head markets, though, you could find Anthony Edwards at -3.5 points, or you could find Karl Anthony Towns at +3.5. That now is up to 4.5, and that probably will make this easy enough for me. Because if Kyrie's going to go under 23.5, can we get Kyrie into under 20 points? We've seen that happen for Ky throughout the postseason. The ceiling met, not by the floor, though there have been some floor games, but an under. He's not given us consistent and repeated overs for Kyrie Irving. And one of these two guys on Minnesota, I just have to believe, is going to have an efficient night from the floor. I've talked at nonstop, and I think, it's now well known about Anthony Edwards and his lack of efficiency from the field. I will read to you his field goal percentage in the last six games. 33%, 47%, 25%, 38%, 29%, 46%. Oh my gosh. It's nightmarish. It's bad. But I know for a fact Ant is super tired. I don't know if Carl's injured. He limped at the end of, I believe, game five against Denver, or if he's overthinking it. But Carl Anthony Towns didn't have some efficiency drop off throughout the back end of the Denver series like Ant did. He has just been unforgivable so far in this series against the Dallas Mavericks. 6 of 20 from the field in Game 1, 2 of 9 from 3. 4 of 16 from the field in Game 2, 1 of 5 from 3. Last game, 5 of 18 from the field and 0 of 8 from 3. I mean, it's pathetic what we've seen from Cat. But Cat, quite frankly, tonight could shoot 80%, score 27 points, and it would still overall be a disgustingly inefficient series. So I think that Karl Anthony Towns plus 4.5 bet will make its way into my pocket. The bet I know I will be placing tonight is a combo bet of Rudy Gobert and Daniel Gafford over 18.5 rebounds combined. I absolutely love this one. And I know last game out, they didn't get close. I know, pretty ironic. 3 Daniel Gafford rebounds, 6 Rudy Gobert boards. This is buy low city. This, for me, is the exact market to be in with the absence of Derek Lively. Daniel Gafford is going to need to play more. And if Daniel Gafford gets us 30 minutes, 10 boards is potentially out there. Rudy Gobert could put Gafford in foul trouble. And if he does, it could be a 15-rebound night for Rudy Gobert, who should be bouncing back in the boards category regardless. Plus, Rudy has had an easier time with Gafford, it feels, than Lively. So I really like Rudy, but I think Gafford is very smart to include, and I am playing him over with Gobert, 18.5 rebounds at a minus 105 price on a combination bet. We're going to take a quick break here on Game Time Decisions. When we come back, we'll hit the NHL playoffs and your Major League Baseball board.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here, Game Time Decisions. Going to get to some key items here. We'll do the baseball board as well. 6:35 start is your first upcoming game with Baltimore and Boston. I lost out on a Pittsburgh-Detroit bet due to some weather, which takes that game off the card, but still plenty to get to. WNBA, you see, surrounding an NHL playoff game. We mentioned the quick pick tonight comes from Fever Sparks with a Sparks team total over 79.5. The Indiana Fever looking for their second win of the season, and it would be both victories coming against this Sparks team. For the Fever, this would be considered the light part of the schedule. There's still plenty of tough games, but they're home for a little stretch here, and they're not playing the teams with the top four odds on a nightly basis to win the WNBA championship, so we will see how they handle that. Again, a few other spots on the WNBA board. Nothing necessarily jumped out. The Chicago Sky are in action, and I keep wondering when Angel Reese is going to break out for an efficient basketball game. Maybe it's just not going to happen, but the Sky as a whole have been a scrappy team, and you see that reflected in this line here tonight, getting only 3 points at home from a Seattle Storm team with a lot of expectations on them heading into this season. Let's shoot it back over to your NHL playoff game as the Hockey with the New York Rangers trying to get involved here and go up 3-1. On Florida, but for the Rangers, job done. I mean, look, yes, you can lose at home to Florida. You already have, right? But you had to get one here against the Panthers, and the pressure is on, and the price shows it. Minus 170 on Florida is very much so they can't lose this game number. I find the total fascinating at 5.5. Under game one, under game two, people looking for a carbon copy game three, and a shootout broke out in that hockey game. 5-4 final with the Rangers winning it in the second straight overtime game of the series. I look at this game And I wonder what we see out of Bobrovsky, the goaltender for Florida. Perhaps more shots tonight for the Rangers, leading to more saves. I am on, of course, this Igor Shesterkin bet we talked about over the weekend for 20 saves in every game in this series, a minus 215 number that has since climbed up now to minus 290 after he checked that box once again against the Florida Panthers in Game 3. You see your series price there with the Rangers going back to favorites against Florida due to now having home ice in this series. It is interesting, though, that number a bit stronger than the pre-series price when the Rangers had home ice. So it looks like the books buying in a little bit to what New York is bringing to the table. Major League Baseball board, again, I mentioned lost out on a Pirates plus a half a run in the first five. That was taken off the card. We do have... Is Ohtani going to get up here or what now? We do have a 2-2 baseball game with the Mets and the Dodgers as the Mets blew another game. I mean, this is just a nightmare season. Not many teams 50 games in want to cancel their year more than the Mets. The Angels, probably. Outside of that, I mean, my oh my. 7 shutout from Tyler McGill, at least from the earned runs category. This is just ugly. Ugly, ugly stuff here from the New York Mets. But let's run through the baseball card. Money lines here. Twins plus 114. Cole Reagans was a home dog against Skubal. I understand that Woods Richardson is not that same caliber pitcher, but I'll take a plus 114 shot here on a home dog in Minnesota. Nathan Eovaldi gets the ball here for the Texas Rangers at minus 130. I'm going to get involved with the Rangers and Nasty Nate against Brandon Pfaadt. I'm always looking to fade Brandon Pfaadt, quite frankly. And I think this is a nice number here. If Eovaldi wasn't pitching for the first time in 3 to 4 weeks, this could be closer to minus 160. So I'm going to take my chances that Eovaldi comes out with the good stuff. Late night Mariners minus 125 with Luis Castillo getting the ball. I understand Hunter Brown has been better over his last 4 or 5 starts. Don't care. Cheap number on Luis Castillo at home, minus 125. And then a big minus 185 Yankees number. Firstly, I think this number could be bigger. So just because it's minus 185 does not mean there's not value. But also, little up two special for those who do get involved in that market. Yanks go 2-0 in the first here off of Juan Soto. Dinger! Tuesday! And then that bet just automatically cashes. Speaking of Dinger Tuesday... Tom Vecchio, right around the corner here on Game Time Decisions. Get his picks for Dinger Tuesday, NBA, NHL. We know that Tom will have us covered. Coach James Young will be in the mix as well. It's a busy night. It's Game Time Decisions on Sports Grid. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're live. It's Game Time Decisions. Tom Vecchio in the mix with us here. Tom, excited to talk on a Tuesday. Plenty to get to.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Full slate of games in the MLB tonight. Two huge games when it comes to the NHL and NBA, like you said. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, let's get into this here with Dinger Tuesday. I'm on Seager and Soto tonight. Where are you looking for the home runs?
Love the Soto call because Griffin Canning is terrible, but let's go to Josh Naylor for the Guardians. You know, they're at Coors Field. It's obviously, we don't need to say everything about Coors Field, fantastic hitting environment, but most importantly, he has a good number. It's up at plus 430, which is not always a spot we can find for really strong power hitters at Coors Field. He comes in with a 118 WRC plus. He's got a 233 ISO versus righties, 37% fly ball rate, which we love to see. He's going against Ryan Feltner. He's only going 0.96 home runs per nine, but he still has a 37% fly ball rate and 35% hard contact rate. So he's right on that line. He's also allowing a 438 slugging. So I think the numbers are a little bit better than they actually are under the hood. So I will take some regression there. And even if they bring in a lefty, he still has a 290 ISO versus lefties, Naylor, that is. I'll also be on Danny Jansen for the Blue Jays and Matt Olson for the Braves.
All right. Excellent stuff there. Let me ask you, by the way, we're going to get into this a little bit more later in the show, but the Ronald Acuna Jr. news and what you kind of make of where Atlanta sits right now, still, you know, top five odds to win a World Series, but not in that same class as the Dodgers like they were preseason.
Right. Off the top of my head, I would put them at best third. Dodgers, Phillies, Braves is probably the way I would go as of now. The Phillies just look so good. Pitching, hitting, they have it all. Dodgers have to be number one. Braves, probably a wild card team actually this year. But as the season goes on, they might fall behind, you know, especially in the pitching.
Yeah, I think Atlanta, and I don't want to overreact, but this is a team that's now lost arguably their two most valuable players, with Spencer Strider's injury happening in season as well. And again, I don't want to overreact. I'm not going to say they're bad, right? But they're not playing great baseball at the moment. And again, I can't say they're going to miss the playoffs or anything of the nature, but man, like sometimes you see stuff like this, Tom, it's like, hey, let's buy low. I feel like it makes me even more confident that Atlanta is not going to do anything. Like, their win total, I believe, is still updated on FanDuel, 97.5. And I don't think that this team's going to still just churn out win after win after win.
It's probably the case where it's like both things can be true at the same time. It's like they're not as good as the Phillies or the Dodgers, but they're also not terrible. And it kind of leaves this murky middle ground. It's like you could probably fade them on a daily basis and be profitable at least for the remaining portion of the season, just because, especially when they're at home, and if Max Fried is on the mound like tonight, like there's probably just going to be value on the other side, just because that's where the lines are going to be.
Yeah, and look, you know, this is a team that's 30-21 right now, which is again solid. Marcelo Zuna is having a MVP-esque year, but outside of that, this is a team that didn't have really anybody from the lineup playing as well as last year, right? Between Olson and Riley and Acuna in his own right, you can take that one of two ways. If those guys bounce back, it can get better. But if this continues, again, I'm just very surprised that number is still 97.5, which I think is pretty interesting. Let's talk some hockey. I have a big picture question for you just because I can't help myself. But, man, and I don't know if this comparison lands. You'll actually know better than me. The Green Bay Packers, right, and the whole Favre to Rodgers thing.
Okay.
Hank was the guy in New York. Everybody loved him, and it was a little bit of a shame he couldn't get the thing done. And now in comes Igor. It feels like he's the best goalie in the league. He's certainly in that conversation at minimum. But how close is Igor to kind of jumping Hank all time? Maybe it doesn't matter, but it feels pretty remarkable that the Rangers are just right back to now having a team built around their goalie being amazing.
Right, and like they are probably, I would have to really dig into some stats to look at like the actual goals saved above expected to see where Igor sits alongside Hank. But like from a record standpoint, it would take Igor years to get there, just in terms of, you know, original 16 wins, you know, fewest games to X amount of wins, postseason shutouts, like all those things. It is probably close in the long run once Igor gets his next contract extension. He's gonna be there for however many more years. It is actually a decent comparison for the Green Bay Packers going from Favre to Rodgers and Hank to Igor. I'm on board with that.
All right, so a little love there. What do you like tonight in this game between the Rangers and the Panthers?
Going to Carter Verhaeghe for over 3.5 shots. Solid line there sitting at, was it plus 126, plus 124, wherever it's sitting there. 7 shots on goal in the most recent game. He also had another 7 shot attempts that didn't hit the net, and then a few more that were blocked. So he had over 20 shot attempts in that game. And obviously he's piling it up on the first forward line, first power play. We get that plus money from him. They have to turn up the offense, not in terms of shot pressure, because what they're doing. They just need to convert more of it at a more consistent basis, because they're getting all these shot attempts and just so few of them are going in. Obviously, Igor's been amazing. Their defense is solid. I would also go to Sasha Barkov on that first forward line alongside Carter Verhaeghe. It's only over 2.5. I'm sitting at minus 108. So we're getting two primary offensive players, and the Panthers are just going to continue to do their thing. They lead the shot attempt advantage 249 to 184 in this series. They're just constantly pouring it on, and that's what they have to do after two back-to-back losses in overtime.
Yeah, one bet that I made for game 3 in this series was Igor for 20 or more saves in every game. It's a FanDuel series special. Now, it was minus 215. It's now minus 290. To be honest with you, there is still value on the number. It really should be minus 500, quite frankly. See, I'll do this because I know you love this stuff, Tom. In the regular season, 85.5% of his games, he had 20 or more saves. which is an implied probability of -590. Then you factor in he's had at least 20 saves in every single playoff game. The only time a starting goalie didn't have 20 saves was Swayman with 19 because he got benched against the Panthers. And Igor's had 25-plus saves in every single game against Florida. I see, you're probably the perfect person to ask. Would you still lay -290 then based on what you just heard?
Not 290. If it was around 200, I would take it.
Okay. Yeah, 290 I think sometimes is just too tough for people, which is understandable. And
but I would
probably
go
myself. Yeah, I play the -215. Here's the thing. I know this is like, it's going to win. Like, it is, you know, and that's kind of the name of the game. NBA, anything you like with Minnesota and Dallas?
Yeah, let's just go to Rudy Gobert under 11.5 points. He's only averaging 12.2 in the playoffs overall, and this is a must-win game for Minnesota. And when we're thinking about this, like, what is the Minnesota game plan? They're not sitting here going, okay, in order to win this game, we need to get Rudy Gobert 15 field goal attempts. Like, that's not the game plan to them winning. We know he's very efficient. Like, there are games, you know, he goes 8 of 10 just because that's what he does. And he can rack up a ton of easy points. I understand that. But him having the ball on a consistent basis in his hands when they're on offense is not the path to Minnesota winning, right? I assume we would agree on that point. Like, they need more play from Karl Anthony Towns. Anthony Edwards has been, yes, underperforming, but it's, I don't want to say not necessarily his fault. He's been fine in the grand scheme of things. They need more from Karl Anthony Towns. Getting the ball to Gobert is not their path to succeeding tonight.
Yeah, it's never plan A. The only – so I just wonder – I'm going to be really interested to see if we get a big Minnesota win, Tom, do we then go, oh, wow, Lively was that important. They're in trouble if he's not back by game five. It's on the board.
I think if we get a big Minnesota win tonight, the next play would be Anthony Edwards unders in the following game, especially if that line jumps up where he's just not going to be as efficient that he could be potentially tonight. We're going to see more of what we saw in the first few games of the series.
All right. All stuff we're going to be keeping our eye on. Great stuff as always from Tom. Josh Naylor for Dinger Tuesday. Tom, appreciate it as always.
Thanks for having me.
All right, great stuff there from Tom. And as I mentioned, we'll get into this a little bit more, but I am on Juan Soto, Corey Seager for some dingers tonight. Up next, Coach James Young. We'll talk about it all. Minnesota and Dallas, Boston, Indiana. If you're lucky, we'll bring up Bronny James. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live on SportsGrid, game time decisions. Let's talk some NBA. Coach James Young is in the fall. JY, great to have you here for a little bit on this Tuesday. It is a huge game four between Minnesota and Dallas. Because if Dallas wins, we're losing the NBA for like a week, and that's not what anybody asked for. Not what I signed up for, not what you signed up for. Look, tell me, are you seeing any optimism for Minnesota heading into game four?
Kevin, I am going to be the eternal optimist as a coach.
Okay.
I think we can make an argument that Minnesota could be up 2-1 in a series. As bad as they played, particularly Cat shooting 3 of 22 from three the last three games. Anthony Edwards, who has not really been good since what, game four of the semi Western Conference semis. And the fact that I could say, if you count 10 possessions, and we don't have to go through 10, 10 possessions, this could be 2-1 the other way. So while it is a 3-0 hole, it's kind of like the Indiana-Boston series where you're like, well, if this play goes this way instead of that way, it could be closer. It could be a 2-1. It could be 2-1, you know, Dallas. It could be 2-1 Minnesota. So to me, I think there's a play here that I could see Minnesota winning this game tonight. And then obviously as a coach, you don't say you can't win four until you win one. So you got to win one and then try to get it back home and hope that you get game five, so on and so forth. But you can't get to game five, K-Dub, unless you win game four first.
Well, the big question is the Derek Lively absence, right? And I think everybody, but I know certainly you and I are aware how important this is, because not only has Lively been awesome, but it has allowed Dallas at all times to have one of either Lively or Gafford on the court. They had to turn to Dwight Powell last game. Maxi Kleba could see action potentially here in game four. What do you think the Lively absence could mean, and is it factoring into any of the bets you're going to be making in tonight's game?
Yeah, it does, because I think Derek Lively has been lively. I would say to use those words, particularly on the offensive board, as a lob threat. He's been really good, Kevin, and the trade for Daniel Gafford has helped this kid relax and come off the bench. Now Gafford's got to play more minutes. Like Daniel Gafford, who can get himself kid up into foul trouble. And now you're looking at, whether it's Dwight Powell or Maxi Kleba, you're not dealing with, let's be honest, any kind of rim protection. So if you're a team like Minnesota, now maybe this lane opens up a little bit more, right? Now on the Luka drives, maybe the lob. I think if I saw somebody, I think this kid's got more lob dunks than like most teams do in the NBA playoffs. Like I think I saw something wild like that. So now you take away the lob threat. Now you don't have to worry about defending the rim. Losing Derek Lively is going to hurt Dallas more than people think, especially at home where you feed off of his energy. The crowd does, especially if he gets those lob dunks.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how long Gafford can stay out on the court. Played 29 minutes last game, which was a series high. JY, any other picks for this game tonight that you're involved with?
Well, if you think about this, right, simply put, no Lively, right? And I think Minnesota's going to try and play with pace. I like the over 211.5, Kevin. I think I could see a path where they got to get this game up and down. They talked about it in game one. They still haven't done it. They got to get the ball up the floor and get Ant the ball in space on the wing where he can't get loaded up on. So I like over 211.5 in the game. And then, Kevin, you're in Jersey. I'm in Jersey. Jersey in the building. Kyrie Irving, over 23.5 points. Why, you ask? Go look at what Kyrie's done to close out games. Just go look. I know he got 22 last game, last time out, versus OKC. But you saw what he did in the second half. You saw what he did in the closing game against the Clippers. Kevin knows this as being a LeBron backer. Look at some of the games he had in closeout games as a member of the Cavs. This guy steps up in big spots. I like Kyrie to go over his points prop. And to go with the fact that I think it's going to be points, Kevin, I like Naz Reid over 12.5 points over the last three games. And this is a guy where if you're Chris Finch, Kevin, you got to find Naz minutes, whether it's for Gobert, which then hurts your defense, or for Cat, who is 3-for-22 from the series from three. Naz is going to get his. Kevin, there have been times when Naz has been, ready for this, folks, better than Ant offensively for this team. And I still think 12.5 is too low. I think he gets 15+. Give me Naz Reid over 12.5 points tonight.
Coach, before I get you out of here, the Indiana Pacers, I haven't talked about them really tonight. I wanted to hit on Boston off the top. What did you make of this Pacers season, and any major takeaway from them being still swept ultimately in the conference finals?
They're young. But the biggest problem that I have is you go into this series, you think Rick Carlisle's out-coaching Joe Mazzulla. Let's just call it what it is. And when you're that close, Kevin, your coach has got to get you over the hump. Remember what I've always said, folks, players win them, coaches lose them. He lost them game one by not advancing the ball. He lost them game one by not making sure they fouled Jaylen Brown in the corner up three. They lost game three with the fact that he did not let Pascal Siakam touch the ball the last two possessions, and he had Nembhard being guarded by the best defender in the world, the Drew Holiday, and he was cookie monster time. And then game number four being up by 8 points in the fourth quarter. Three times, 90% win chance in the added half, and lost it. They will mature. But damn it, Rick Carlisle, Lloyd Pierce, Jim Boylan, the rest of that staff, they got to be better, K-Dub. They blew it. We should be playing tomorrow night in Boston.
I think it's hard to argue. Great stuff as always from Coach James Young. We'll be right back here talking more NBA next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're back with you right here on Game Time Decisions. And there was some big NBA draft news today. There's a lot of NBA draft stuff that's been coming out about teams that are looking to make some moves. I know there's been some Stephon Castle stuff recently, Rashear, Klingon, plenty of interesting stuff. But the name that people are continuously drawn to is Bronny James. And that is evident by the market. If you look across your top sports books, they'll give you the first pick. And they'll give you where is Bronny going. There is also an over-under draft position out there for Bronny James at 39.5. And I think today's news around Bronny, reported by Shams Charania, is really fascinating and could be really important. Bronny had 10 workouts potentially scheduled with different teams around the league, and he is only going to be working out now with the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Lakers. Before this report had come out, we had heard that Phoenix was interested in Bronny. They have the 22nd overall draft pick, and that is the only pick that the Phoenix Suns have. There have been some additional reports and ideas that Phoenix believes bringing in Bronny could lead to them bringing in LeBron James. The idea of Bronny and LeBron being a package deal, I feel, has been discussed less. Perhaps that ramps up as we get closer. It was certainly going to be one of the most fascinating aspects of this draft if you could essentially draft LeBron in it. While the oldest player now in the league, still one of the obvious 10 best in the sport, who I believe will be playing two more seasons. So if you can bring in LeBron for 2 years, depending on your timeline, situation, and surroundings, would LeBron be worth your first-round draft choice, much less a potential player you could develop in Bronny James? I would say the answer is yes for a lot. But now we have, it appears, two teams zeroing in on Bronny. Why this is incredibly fascinating, though, is when we pair this report with what Bronny has said, it feels as if Bronny has been given a promise. The idea of LeBron plus Bronny is something LeBron introduced and Bronny has somewhat pushed back on. His goal, main goal, is not to play with his father, but to play in the NBA. The more teams you work out with, the more teams you impress, the likelier that that chance is. If you go out there and have a workout with Utah, then perhaps you come off of the board, not realistically at 10, but at 29 or 32. That's certainly in play. If you have a workout with the New York Knicks, who have picks 24 and 25, then all of a sudden, that could be in play. Yet Bronny declining those, limiting his options, wouldn't that suggest he's been given a guarantee by Phoenix? You won't fall past 22? There are LeBron ties to Phoenix through James Jones, who runs that organization. And if James Jones has a sense that drafting Bronny can get him LeBron, and if at minimum the clutch camp is comfortable with the Phoenix Suns drafting Bronny, then why bother with the outside noise? It's Lakers or Phoenix, and we're happy with the result. The Suns only have one pick. And the Bronny James camp just made a decision that suggests they know where they're going, which then suggests betting the Suns to be the team to select Bronny at 10-1 alongside the Lakers to be the team to select Bronny at +180 would be a good piece of business. And more importantly, taking Bronny under 39.5 draft position feels can't miss. We're a month out. Perhaps there is some misdirection here. But it now feels likelier that Bronny is selected inside the top 25 than outside of the top 40. Time will tell, rumors will swirl, but I'm already on this under 39.5, and I'm thinking about jumping in again. We'll talk baseball next.